Better Selves, episode number 5, and this is your host, Raymond Hu, directly from Taiwan. It's 9:40 a.m. here, and with me is my co-host, the always fun and interesting Michael Huang.
Live from Los Angeles, it's Sunday night. Yes.
Yeah, that's always a good thing, isn't it? It's a Sunday. Oh, wait a minute. Tomorrow is Monday for you.
That's right. It's actually Monday for you already in Taiwan, I know, right? So
yeah,
we're separated by the international dateline.
I'm sitting at home, but I am technically working, so it's not a problem.
No, we're just going to try to keep it nice and sweet and short, and stay tuned for next week for some major changes that are coming to this podcast. New fun, new additions, and new coolness. So
we're going to have the triumvirate.
Yes. And I don't want to spoil any more surprises, but this podcast may just get a lot bigger and a lot more commercial. So just you wait.
Uh-huh. Now, why don't you go ahead and get started on the news then?
All right.
We're not bullshitting.
All right. News rundown for this week. First news item that's coming up this week is more Studio Ghibli news, though it's not quite as big as any project announcements. Studio Ghibli is offering a research grant for anybody who's doing animation research, whether it's Japanese animation or any other kind of animation. They're offering a research grant of 300,000 yen, and apparently you have to be under the age of 35 to get it. And basically they're offering this grant to anybody who wants to come over, especially to the Ghibli Museum, to come and look up some information and to write papers or to do any kind of research on animation.
In Japanese?
No, any language, any nationality, any kind
Let's
of
go.
Animation too.
Let's go.
Except that, here's the thing, 300,000 yen is not much money at all.
Oh, that's right.
It's equivalent of roughly
$3,000.
It's equivalent of roughly $2,700. And that is not enough to cover any sort of living expenses in Japan whatsoever. And I have no idea how you could, you know, get over there. I guess it would be supplemented by other research grants you might get from your university department or something like that.
Or you could simply teach English.
Or that too. Like, that's what you did actually for a year, right? So
exactly. If you're from America and speaks perfectly good English.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so basically, if anybody out there is interested in doing some academically oriented research on animation, apparently Ghibli wants to give you some money. And here's the thing. I am actually half seriously considering doing an Evangelion paper and submitting it to the Society of Biblical Literature. I just got the call for papers for the SBL for next year, or actually this coming year. And
I want to explain that some of the terms you just used just now.
Well, basically, the call for papers is basically they send out an invitation and some information about, you know, how you can submit a paper proposal for the next academic conference. And if they accept your proposal, you'll get to present your paper in front of a panel, in front of other academics, and you get to answer questions, you know, after you're done presenting your paper.
Generally, like the congressional board?
It's not like an interrogation. Like, it's usually not that unfriendly. At least not at the panels I attended last year. Though there are some well-known jerks, like well-known scholars who are like really who exist primarily to tear new scholars down. But I didn't meet any of them. Everybody I met was really nice.
They probably jerk off to that too.
Well, you can call that a form of intellectual jerking off if you want. But the sense of superiority you get from proving your point. And there's actually a group called the Bible, the Popular Culture and Media. And they've done comic books before, like American comic books. And they are actually also interested. There's like it's like one of the topics they said that they are interested in learning more about is Asian media. And Asian perspectives. Actually, that seems to be the whole theme for next year's conference in 2007, is East Asian perspectives on religion. And Evangelion was actually really interesting because it's like an ordinary layman's, like Japanese layman's take on the stranger aspects and more esoteric aspects of Judaism and Christianity. And if I had to write a paper, I don't know, I might actually write it about, primarily about what this actually shows about their perception of Christianity and Judaism more than the actual religious ideas in this show, which I think are actually close to nil. But
yeah, what's that weird ass term? Like, it's like Gnostic, some shit like that.
Gnosticism, yes, it's the yeah, that's kind of the esoteric Christian heresy that was kind of popular in the second and third centuries. It's basically founded on the idea that material reality is evil and was created by an evil god, the Demiurge. And that the goal of life is to escape material reality and to ascend to a pure spiritual existence.
Or to tear down the freaking AT field.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and it's really interesting for, if you look at the ending of Evangelion, it's a very Gnostic kind of ending, at least in the original television series. Not so much in the movie, actually.
No, the movie simply leaves you with, what the fuck?
That, and I think it also reaffirms physical reality in a way that kind of rejects that the way in the TV ending tried to spin it as a happy ending, I think, when I really thought it was a really pretty bad, like, bad ending. So anyway, I don't want to spoil too much for it. Wait a minute. I wonder if there actually is anybody out there who hasn't actually watched Evangelion.
Yeah, because some people just hate the crap.
It's also old now. That's another thing. It's old. It's actually, like, what, 12 years old this year? Yeah, 12 years old. And that's... Yeah,
1996, right?
95, actually, I think.
95? Not 96?
It came out in 95. It ended in 96. Oh. And the movie came out in 97. I remember this pretty... Because I actually look at, like, copyright dates and stuff. And yeah, Anna was rewriting it. He's actually redoing the movies. And... Or rather, he's redoing the whole series... as a series of movies. That's what he's doing.
Oh, that's like Gundam movies.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Basically, and he wants to make it clear. He wants to remove the esotericism, apparently. And he probably just wants to turn it into another giant robot show, which is kind of disappointing, to be honest.
It's one of those merchandising schemes. By the way, you've been doing one of them.
That's right. I'm going to be posting pictures as soon as I'm done, though I have to wait for my... camera card to come back from Maryland. I had inadvertently left it at home, but I gave it to my parents to use temporarily for a while. And basically, yeah, I Ray, as a birthday present some time ago, he gave me a Unit 2, a snap-on plastic model of Evangelion Unit 2, and I've been assembling it since yesterday. So far, I've built the arms and the legs and a small part of the torso. The torso is pretty complicated, so it'll take me a while.
It comes with a small Asuka figure, doesn't it?
It does, and actually, it also comes with a Misato figure too.
Oh, that's right. You get two of them to play with.
That's right. Though they're actually featureless, like they don't have any colors or anything on them. So if you want
they're supposed to be. Yeah.
So you have to paint them on like yourself if you want to. And unfortunately, my fingers are kind of clumsy, and I don't think I can...
It's a pain in the butt. It's just a pain in the butt, dude.
Yeah.
Just imagine.
Yeah, fortunately,
having Misato in your living room with Asuka.
Oh, no.
You have Tsundere, and you have Onesama.
Yeah. Onesama. Those are my two favorite female character types in anime, if you all don't know, so...
It's Bellini and Ravi all the way.
Yeah. That's basically... Oh, I gotta show you sometime the Evangelion fan dub parody called Evangelion Redeath. It's absolutely hilarious how they completely twist the story around just by like resetting some scenes and redubbing it. It's really, really funny. They basically take especially all the ultra serious, pretentious scenes and they completely take it apart. Like the whole elevator, you know, standing in an elevator for 1 minute without doing anything. That gets taken apart. Every time Gendo appears, there's like pimp music now. Like, it's Gendo. Man, I'm getting sick of his theme song.
You know, that's... I'm sure lots of people Mystery Science Theater 3000 did. I'm sure lots of people did.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely one of those shows that almost lends itself to that sort of thing, though it's a little bit too good for that sometimes.
Like, no, it's not.
Well, it's not. Well, okay, maybe.
No, it's not.
Okay, maybe the you know, like, show. Maybe the television.
Too many plot holes, man.
Yeah.
It's like, oh wait, I thought Misato just killed the show. What's his name?
Kaji.
I thought Misato just killed Kaji. Oh wait, no, she didn't. Oh wait, she's back in the apartment receiving the message, and she's crying over it. Like, oh, I didn't do it. I didn't realize I just killed Kaji, and now he's not dead somewhere.
Yeah, you know that's weird.
He's undead.
Because the way it was filmed. It makes it very, it implies very strongly that she did it. And when I first watched the show, I had no, you know, compunction or idea that it was anything otherwise. I assumed that she was crying over him because she felt really guilty, that she was forced to do it. But she did it anyway in order to either preserve her life or keep her job. But of course, you know, that's a kind of a moment of moral compromise. And I thought that. But anyway. That's probably spoiling a little too much right there already, but...
Yeah, like, people didn't watch it anyways.
Oh, well, who cares about that? Anyway, that's a 12-year-old show, and I'll probably talk more about it if they ever fan sub the movies here again, the new movies, because I'm very interested in... Because it is, for better or for worse, it was the show that got me into anime, so... I wouldn't be doing this podcast if I hadn't watched that pirated copy of Evangelion 7 years ago, so...
For me, it was Sailor Moon. All right, next.
Next item. All right, Studio Madhouse, in cooperation with a Hong Kong movie studio, is apparently doing an anime version of the Highlanders saga. It's going to be released straight to DVD, apparently. Oh. It's not going to get any kind of theatrical release or any kind of television broadcast. And the American edition is going to be actually out on DVD by June 5th. So it looks like they're going to be... That's one of the most endless, like, sagas or, like, franchises I know of.
Like, wait, how they're many going to do a TV? Been? Yeah, no. Movies like four.
It's a movie.
Movies like four.
Yeah, there's four movies. I think there's at least, there's a one, you know, there's a pretty well-known TV series with the Queen, like, opening song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
And everybody Duncan knows.
The Clemmer Cloth.
Yeah, and everybody knows that the movies after the first one have completely sucked. And I have no idea whether the anime version is going to be any better.
The swords were cool.
Well, yeah. They're going to... Yeah, basically, this time, the Highlander gets a Japanese, like, samurai katana. And so he gets to fight with that, so...
And, he always had. He always had a Japanese weapon.
Oh, really? I've never really seen it.
Like, B-War or whatever, always had a Japanese weapon.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's just like in the movie, where he cuts on his head off, he gets the power... He could suck the power out of it. Well, the power escapes from the person, and it gets into his body.
Oh, okay. It's kind of weird, because I actually really thought the plot of Afro Samurai was very, very similar to Highlander. And looks like
not
they're going to go...
close.
They're going to go, actually, for the same kind of effect, because they're... Like, the director said that they're going to be filming... The Highlander anime, like, they're deliberately going to make it a lot like Ninja Scroll. And...
Oh.
Because that's what they really want to do. And I actually saw, like, a little snippet of the trailer, and yeah, it's going to be really bloody. So...
What the hell? You know?
Yeah, so... And here's some more adaptation news, apparently. Production IG is currently holding talks and trying to get permission to sell Ghost in the Shell... to some Hollywood producers so they can make a live-action adaptation.
Oh, yeah.
I actually think this has some chance of being actually watchable and decent. Because Ghost in the Shell, if anything, seems... I mean, there are some things that are going to be hard to translate, like character names and things like that. I'm pretty sure they'll probably, like, westernize them. But this basic storyline and the basic ideas have actually been done in movies before. Like, I think probably... It's never been better done than in Blade Runner, but...
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Blade Runner is the mother goddess of them all, really, of all these sorts of movies, of all cyberpunk, like, stories in general, I think.
It's a bad motherfucker movie.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorites as well. And,
beep!
But
I think I just delayed my own beep.
Well, that's okay. I'm not going to beep anything out unless it's really, really excessive, or if I think it's going to sound really funny. If it peeked out. See, I remember that there was a South Park episode that entirely was composed of, like... It basically had 169 instances of the word shit. And every single time they, you know, did it on, you know, on TV, they had to beep it out. And so there was actually a counter in the corner that counted every time, you know, the beeping happened. And it was really, really, really funny when they had the beeping. But it wasn't funny anymore when they didn't, when you watched the uncensored version. It was, it's only funny when it has the beeping.
Of course.
Yeah. But yeah, Production IG, basically, they're currently in the first phase in that they actually have to get permission from Kundansha in order to even be able to talk to the producers in Hollywood. Who do you think actually would like be a good cast for Ghost in the Shell? I've been thinking about this, actually.
For a female lead?
Yeah, who would
be
a good
Matoko? Important person?
The major, who would be good?
Oh, God. Kusanagi is not an easy character to play. And
yeah. Like her, the dub actress, like in the first Ghost in the Shell, completely screwed up her character, I thought. So
She stunk to high heaven. Yeah. But for women, I don't really follow Hollywood actresses anymore, even. Oh. I go with Buffy. I'm just kidding. No way. No way. No, 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 no. Too cutesy. I go with Mia Jonovich, since she did Ultraviolet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, and I've heard more than one suggestion for Angelina Jolie, but the only problem being that she really stunk up in Tomb Raider, and so...
No, I think she's all right, like, just as the character goes in Tomb Raider, but I don't like her. I don't want her. Mm-hmm. You know, just don't want her.
And I don't think... And I've been trying to think about who would be the best choice to direct this film. My answer has always been the Ridley Scott of 20 years ago. But the problem is that Ridley Scott makes a lot of really generic Hollywood popcorn movies now. So,
Let's go with the Wachowski brothers.
I don't know. You see, that's the thing. I think Ghost in the Shell is a lot more cerebral than The Matrix. And to do it right. And the problem is that I'm afraid that if the Wachowski brothers would... They would probably do something very similar to the second and third Matrix movies, which were terrible, quite frankly. Terrible.
Get a better writer.
Yeah. I'm actually thinking, they have to keep Michael Bay far, 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 far away. But he's already doing Transformers. But I thought maybe James Cameron was actually originally planning to do an adaptation of Dark Angel Alita, but that's been put on hold. And
James Cameron?
James Cameron.
He's gonna blow the budget to sky high, and he's gonna lit $100 for cigarettes? I don't think so.
Well, the thing is that it depends on how much of the philosophical stuff they want to preserve in Ghost in the Shell. If they actually want to just do the cyberpunk action stuff, and it would, I think, be a perfectly respectable film if they did, actually, Cameron would not be a bad choice, because he did, he did awesome on the Terminator films and
that's true
in the second Aliens movie, so he's really good at sci-fi action. He's actually really good at that, and so he would. And also The Abyss. I don't know if you've ever watched The Abyss.
No. I know, get Ron Howard to do it. He'll make it like all nice and touching and stuff.
Wait,
and that people get
didn't he just do the Da Vinci Code?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, shit, that's right.
Yeah.
Get John Woo to do it, obviously.
I don't know about John Woo, honestly. Actually, maybe, no, I don't know. Ang Lee hasn't ever done a science fiction movie.
The Hulk? The Hulk.
Yeah, he did The Hulk, but that was considered a failure.
Oh.
That didn't come off very well. Maybe Sam Raimi, you know, because he did an awesome job with the Spider-Man films. But I don't know. I mean, this is all in the preliminary stage. I mean, my guess is that if it ever makes it into Hollywood, it'll definitely mostly become a cyberpunk action flick. You know, again, along the lines of probably, I don't know if you ever saw the small budget movie Equilibrium. That's sort of what it reminds me of, if anything.
Hey, what about the guy who directed Jurassic Park?
That would be Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Spielberg? Actually, Minority Report. Minority Report and Ghost in the Shell, no, they're not really similar thematically, but they're both cerebral science fiction films. And actually, I loved Minority Report. But I also think that Minority Report was untypical for Spielberg. Like, it was...
Yeah.
It was less sentimental and less and a little bit more thought heavy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did you see War of the Worlds, actually? I know a lot of people who loved War of the Worlds.
Really? Yeah. No, I didn't. I watched Minority Report, but I didn't watch the War of Worlds.
Yeah. Hmm. Tom Cruise as Bateau.
No,
I don't think so.
No, he's not gruff. He's not gruff. He's not much of a gruff.
Yeah, Tom Cruise can't do stoic. He can't do, like, yeah, gruff and professional. He can't. So, who would make a good Bateau, actually? I've been trying to think. Russell Crowe.
Arnold.
Maybe? Russell Crowe?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wouldn't be Arnold.
Arnold, I think, is busy doing other things here in California right now.
No, I don't care. I don't want to see him as Bato. I piss my pants laughing my ass off
if he does Bato. Because of his accent. You can't take him seriously because of his accent anymore. And the good thing is that he figured that out by Terminator 3. He figured that out. So
he's not doing any more movies anymore. He's not stupid.
He's had a career change, so.
He's not stupid, yeah.
No. He has better things to do right now. Yeah, he needs to save the healthcare and the road system here in California first.
Oh, yeah, like he knows how to do that, right?
Well, actually, he's been a pretty decent governor, quite frankly. Okay. And so I have to say, but anyway, this is not a political podcast, and this is also not a Hollywood podcast. But so that pretty much does it for the news. And anyway, why don't we go ahead and move on to a brief review section? Anyway, it looks like we weren't able to do something together this week, but I guess we're just going to give some brief impressions of two different shows. You're going to go with Megadere, right?
Megadere, yes.
And I'm going to talk a little bit about my most guilty pleasure last year, Zero No Skyva.
Oh, I didn't finish downloading that shit. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So why don't you go ahead?
All right, talk a little bit about Zero No Skyva, which is a show which, by all rights, I shouldn't have liked, but I really did anyway. It's, to summarize, it's been described as not very accurately, but not entirely based on untruth, as Harry Potter as if it were a Japanese harem comedy, because it is set in a magic school academy, and the main, except that only one of the main characters is actually a magician, though, and the main character, Louise, she's actually a really bad magician. That's why she's called Louise de Zero. Hence, and basically the plot of the show revolves around how everybody in the school is supposed to summon a familiar, like an animal or a magical creature of some kind, to help them with their magical exploits. And, you know, most people get, like, these really cool big monsters like dragons and gigantic moles and weird creatures with giant eyes. But when Louise, who constantly makes the classroom explode every time she casts magic, tries to summon hers, she ends up summoning an ordinary boy from Japan into the magic. I should explain that the world that Louise and all the magical people live in is a totally separate world from Earth. It has two moons, and so a lot of things don't work exactly the same way.
That's like Gaia. Gaia.
It's kind of like Gaia, except it's completely comedic. And the basic rule in this other world is that all magic users, or rather all aristocrats, are magic users. Not every magic user is an aristocrat, but, and so everybody who goes to this magic academy is, you know, descended from a noble family, including, of course, Louise. It's really interesting, actually. Most of the main characters in this show are named after real historical figures, especially French ones.
Magicians?
Like French historical figures. Louise, for instance, is actually named after Louise de La Vallière, who was one of Louis XIV's most famous mistresses. Let me see. Montmorency is another one. Montmorency is one of the most famous and oldest families in France. Because it takes place in a country which is superficially similar to Belgium. And the map of the world looks very superficially similar to Western Europe. And it actually gets into politics later on, interestingly enough. But it is a harem comedy, at least for the first 7 or 8 episodes, in which Saito, the boy from Japan who drops into this magical world, you know, is supposed to be this familiar for Louise, And Louise, of course, treats him kind of like a dog at first. But you know how this whole thing works. Louise is a typical tsundere. She doesn't want to admit that she actually likes him, but she really does, even though she's takes inordinate pleasure in whipping him. And I mean literally whipping him. Like, not just metaphorically. She actually whips him with a horse whip. And she has this really sadistic smile on her face when she does.
So it's an S&M horror comedy.
Oh, man. I think, you know, when I think about it, that's probably at least part of the subtext. And there's also this other big-boobed girl named, what's her face? She's supposed to be from the equivalent of Germany. Oh, I can't remember her name for some reason. She has kind of dark skin for some reason, even though she has a German name. But she keeps trying to seduce Saito and take him away from her, from Louise. And there's also this maid character. She's a maid in the school. And she actually has a really interesting secret with her origins, but I don't want to spoil that. Even though, here's my big quibble with the show. The show is really predictable. It's really, really easy to figure out the plot twists, especially if you've seen shows like this before. And
oh, gee. Yeah. I wonder.
Like, I figured out everything, every major plot twist at least 2 episodes ahead, sometimes 3. And
it's only had 13 episodes.
There's only 13 episodes, and basically 7 of those episodes are slapstick, you know, romantic comedy. The standard, you know, guy gets beat up all the time, gets surrounded by cute girls, other cute girls who really, really like him or try to seduce him or do other things. Though in this case, he's not quite as indecisive as most harem leads tend to be. He actually sometimes has balls, for real. And he's really like...
balls of steel?
I mean, he can fight. He's willing to stand up for himself, even to Louise. And he's... The only reason why he gets whipped physically...
Testicular fortitude, huh?
...is because she literally has a whip. So there's not much you can do about that. And so, and then in the last 4 episodes or so, they try to tack on a half-hearted plot that tries to make it, you know, add some more action and add a little bit more seriousness, but it feels really kind of contrived and manufactured. And yeah, I wanted to give it some credit for wrapping up all of its plot lines. That's something a lot of anime don't do. And actually,
a plot.
Well, I mean, and it's there are several questions about the characters that, you know, start coming up, you know, from the very first episode. And even though the answers are relatively predictable, you know, at least they get answered. And at least they don't devolve into some vague metaphysical crap like an awful lot of anime seems to like to do these days. So maybe that phase has passed. I think maybe there was a time like in the late 90s when that was really popular after Evangelion, I think. Even Final Fantasy VII did it, but I think that phase may have passed because lately I've been seeing anime. Been seeing a lot of anime lately with satisfying endings. Or at least endings that, you know, come to some sort of traditional conclusion. So I don't know about you, but basically you'll enjoy Zero No Skyma if you enjoy harem comedies, if you like certain kinds of character types, if you like slapstick humor. Anybody who likes Love Hina should have no problem with Zero No Skyma. It's not the greatest show. It's not going to win any awards for originality. But it does make sense. Each episode is engaging and, you know, it's actually competently written. Like, unlike, like, some of the new, like, I've actually tried watching some of the new moe comedies this season. I think the one I just tried the other day was Manabi Straight. And it was just simply incompetently written. Like, there was just no flow, no pacing, there's just no sense of when you should put this conflict or this situation without it seeming jarring. And so it didn't feel like it was well written. Whereas at least with Zero No Skyma, they had a really basic sense of narrative structure, and it was at least, you know, just, you know, you can just sit down and watch it and not think about it too hard because the writers are doing their job. I don't know how else to put it.
For the ultimate moe drama, you should watch Bingjotan.
I haven't heard of that.
Never?
I haven't heard of that. It's really odd.
Nobody knows about it. But,
Super I'm not sure that actually made it onto the American fansub community. Because I haven't heard of that.
No, No, but it's super popular in Asia when it came out.
There are several like moe comedies this season, actually. One is Manabi Straight. The other one, another one is called Hidamari Sketch, which is about a bunch of art students. And except this is not like Honey and Clover, which is also set in an art school. This is much, much more moe. And there's another one called...
Yeah, we got to debate on that sometime, because you don't understand what moe means. You have absolutely no clue whatsoever what moe means.
I freely admit I don't get it. I just don't get the appeal of it. And I tried to watch it again, I mean, this time, and I think the only show for me extremely cute that I really like is Azumanga Daioh. And that's because the humor in that show is so bizarre and so
original. Nothing moe about it, dude. Yeah. There's not one... Okay, there's one person, but she's not moe at all. There's nothing moe about her. None whatsoever.
I think one criteria of moe is that they have to look like they're kindergartners, but they're actually teenagers. Like, the thing with Chiyo-chan in Azumanga Daioh is that she's actually 10 years old.
But she's just not. There's just nothing about her. Yeah, I'll explain next time.
Anyway, there is actually a female equivalent of moe. Like, you know, what a girl would think is moe. And you can see that in Oran Host Club. That was a very interesting definition of... basically, it means yaoi.
It's yaoi.
Yeah.
There's nothing moe about it.
Like, there's a scene... like, there is this scene, yeah, where... Like, there's, like, this kind of semi-yaoi scene, and then, like, an entire pack of fangirls, like, go, moe, hey, moe, and they all squealing and everything like that. It's hilarious, actually.
Yeah, women usually don't scream that. But anyway, I don't know where the author came up with that one, but it's the wrong perception.
Anyway, we'll have that debate maybe next episode, like, when Jeremy comes along. Anyway, you wanted to talk about Megadere?
Oh, yeah. I don't know what Megadere, dude. It's like, that's like a really sweet-ass show that the women actually confess to the guy like within like few minutes into the show. And then basically what happened is that this really short dude, gets a really good score and enters academy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that world is filled with has this type of power called Beatrix.
Mm-hmm.
And what is Beatrix? Well, who knows? It's a magical power.
Beatrix.
If you can use it. Beatrix, yeah.
The name Beatrix actually means happiness. It comes from Beatus. I'm sorry, I'm reading the Divine Comedy, in which, like, the Divine Comedy is based on this idea that this guy, you know, the guy Dante, he's being guided by Beatrix, the love of his life, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure most people listening really care about that.
Happiness. It means happiness. That's why I wanted it.
It's a Western feminine name.
Yeah.
I think that's what most people care about. But you know, for everybody who liked that note. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so all right, what happened is that there's a world power called Beatrice, and this guy gets with his academy. He's short. He's a type that women usually never confesses to. And he looks like he never gonna grow up. The only thing good about him is he got a smile and he's really cute. The type of those Onesan types like this cute boy. And basically he gets in the school and then this tall, like good looking girl who's like he didn't know and she's like oh supremely powerful, why he didn't know that, and she comes and she says, oh, would you go out with me? And she's like, would you like me? He's like, what? And then chaos ensue. That's my favorite phrase for everything. But the only thing, the thing I like about this show is that it's called Megadere, but I don't think the main character is quite Tsundere. She's more like violent person, like to what everyone knows. And she's like Naru with superpowers.
So instead of just simply getting sent into the clouds, he gets knocked into the stratosphere?
Well, yeah, they blow things up. Okay. Actually, Naru has a better punching power. Basically, main character, Ayako, basically, what she does is she blows things up. She like she lifts up cars and crashes the student council members because they were like listening. She breaks through the roof and breaks into a council. Mm-hmm. And like they will have that, you know how Eva when the enemy invading. Mm-hmm. And then basically they'll have like alert like in Japanese, right? Mm-hmm. And they have that. They just say alert on the wall, and then you don't hear that music, of course. But the student council leader is like, oh, you know, this place is being reinforced with 3 levels of reinforcement like that. They should be able to break in, you know. And of course she always breaks in.
Or yeah, I think they're ready for her.
Yeah, and she always just gets in there like later it's just so easy, you're like, what the hell happened there? But anyway, yeah, and the funny part is where she wants to get a better relationship with him and Mamoru, right? Mamoru, main guy's name is Mamoru, and Mamoru wants to get better with her. Mm-hmm. But of course the student council always come up with some wacky ideas to help him. Mm-hmm. And usually mess him up, or they're usually always taking they're like really awful paparazzis.
Huh.
They'll basically take pictures and records of like most intimate confessing moment and all that.
Oh, like Big Brother.
Yeah, it's like exactly. And then basically she discovers, she's like, oh, you guys so gonna get it. She blows them up, kick the asses. And the funny part is there's always this girl with a camera, and she always take pictures of everything. Everybody would get asses kicked. They're always like, jeez. They're always like very happy. It's like they know like it's very lethal to go to like play with her, but they love it.
You know, and what this show actually sounds kind of like, is the guy really unwilling to go out with her in this case?
No, he's not. In this case, they really like each other.
Okay,
I think they just break out break off the stereotype or whatever.
It actually
sounds
like
he likes her, she likes him.
I mean, it sounds like actually the romance isn't the central part of the show.
It kind of is like he's short and she's tall and she protects him a lot.
Uh-huh.
It's for the otakus like who really don't see any women. They really don't get any women action.
Well,
and
yeah,
they're like short.
Like a good
and like short.
Anime, so.
Yeah, exactly. And they're short and they don't do anything to improve themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're just nice guys. Well, that's it.
That's really interesting.
That's for them. Yeah,
I see that as a kind of a cultural difference with the way we, with Westerners do their fiction as opposed to a lot of the Japanese anime. Like, the reason why you see all these buff guys, stoic, badass guys in Western media is because even if you're exactly the opposite of that, that's the kind of person you wish you were. Like, if you grew up in America, especially.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's who you want to imagine yourself to be. Like this cool badass. Like probably the ultimate example would be like probably the ultimate apotheosis is Samuel L. Jackson. But whereas in a lot of the otaku anime at least, I really have no idea how typical that is of all Japanese media. But yeah, your typical harem lead is going to be like this relatively wimpy, or kind of dithering guy. Who's much closer to reality to a lot of these,
or scatterbrained,
maybe one average audience member, I guess. And
no, some otakus are extremely smart, the programmers, so that's different.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you still have some of the badass type shows too. I mean, like Black Lagoon, for instance. But even Black Lagoon, you had Rock, who, in many ways, is much closer to the standard Japanese anime hero, and.
But he's smart. He's intelligent.
But he is smart.
He's very smart. Well, he's has great negotiating skills anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I mean,
that's
like somebody like Tenshi or somebody like Keitaro in Love Hina, they're pretty dumb.
Keitaro? Woohoo! Yeah, but the thing about Mega Diary is, you know how everyone else in those shows gets beat up? They're like, oh, ouch, she hurts, right?
Yeah.
In this show, they're loving it. They're loving getting their asses kicked by her. They're loving it.
Really?
They love her. It's like you're facing a giant, like a huge, it's like you have a lion in a cage. And you like to provoke the lion, and you let the lion out.
Ah, I see.
You're like pulling out the hair, you're poking it, and you're throwing it with a rock.
So
and
you're trying to see how far you can go.
Yeah, and the cage periodically opens, and you get chaos and hell on your ass, but they love it. and then this, the picture, the camera girl always manage to take a picture of the best scene, or always the scene that Tsudere girl, the Ayako doesn't want the people to see. And she sells his pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And you got this guy like with glasses who's like a Ayako stalker. I mean, the number one of her guardian team or some shit like that.
But, does he have any powers?
No, he doesn't have any power.
Does he have any kind of abilities whatsoever?
No, he's not even there most of the time. I think it's like he just comes out once a while and say, "Oh, I gotta do something," and he does nothing basically.
Why does she like him? I guess that would be.
Oh, you mean the main character? You mean the main character, the short guy?
Yeah. Oh, this is not the same character. We're not talking about
the
same character.
No. The fanboy is some other guy.
Oh, the fanboy. Okay, that's a different character. Okay.
We don't know. Right. We don't know why she likes Mamoru. He's short. He's 155. He looks really cute, like a kid. And he smiles really nicely, but there's nothing else going on. He's got some powers. Okay, he's got some powers. But we don't know why she likes him. He walks into school. He sees her under the sakura falls, cherry blossom falls, and she walks up, and she confesses. That's it. There's not one else around. I'm not even on episode 10. Like, I'm on episode 8. I don't even know why she confessed.
Wow.
Oh, and like some other worthy character to mention, the Moe little girl character.
Okay.
German, white hair, and she always tried to be cool, and she like falls clumsily or does something really stupid. Like, you know, she's just really really cute. Like, she's really Moe, you know, like, she's really cute.
The main guy? Commander character in Full Metal Panic. What's her name? I don't remember.
No, she's like a little girl. She's the same height as Mamoru.
Oh,
she's 155, but she's white hair. She's supposed to be German, and you know, and basically like one scene, she's standing on the top of a snow snow cliff, and she's like, you know, like, you know, like, I'm prepared to fight you. I'm gonna kick you. And she falls head first into the snow, and her legs just waves in the air, and she wears short skirt. And I just can't get out.
Is there a lot of fan service in the show?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's not like What's that? Okay, it's not like the action show with lots of pants. Panties. It's not like that.
Magica.
Yeah, it's not Magica, but okay. Yeah, and it's kind of average. I guess a little. It's not a fan service show. A fan service show will have more.
Okay.
It's basically like a little less. But yeah, you do get to see some pants, some petty scenes.
So fan service isn't the point of the show.
No, it isn't. I think the main point of the show is this is a short guy who ordinarily in real world would never, get anybody. But a tall, good-looking girl comes and confesses to him, and they're in love.
Uh-huh.
No, there's not. I'm not sure. Or the girl says, "Well, I don't know if I like you." Or nothing like that. I think it's dairy part. Not much of a soon.
I don't know. There's like nothing. There's no soon in the title anyway. I mean, it's called Mega Dairy, which just means super sweet.
She is.
There's only one half of the equation here.
Well, she's super sweet and super violent.
But not to him. That's the difference. A tsundere, like, feels conflicted. That's like the essence of the character. She can't really decide whether to be open about her feelings, which are kind of suppressed. That's the.
Oh, and yeah, I know this girl kicks ass. She kicks serious ass because she has the most power. She's like one of the most. She's like basically the most powerful character in the world.
See, the reason that when you first told me that, it really reminded me of another current show called Sumomomomomomo, which is.
Yeah,
really
don't stop there. Don't stop there.
It's endless. Seriously.
Ugh.
I mean, the main character's name is Momoko, and she's a really weird pink-haired girl who's also this incredibly over-the-top, crazy talented martial artist. And her mission in life is to bear the child of this other guy who also belongs to this really awesome martial arts family, except he doesn't want to be a martial artist. He wants to be a lawyer. And he's a real hard ass. He's like really a jerk, and like he's really awful, and he really treats her kind of. He's really cold to her and everything, but she's like this ridiculously over the top. She keeps trying to seduce him. That's like where all the humor in the show comes from. She keeps trying to seduce him, like literally tries to get him into bed. And
does it at least have a good cast?
It does, actually. It's got some really over-the-top humor. And
See, shows like this are funny because it has a good cast. Like Mega Driver, it's got funny cast. Like, these people are just funny as hell. It's just like, oh my goodness. And then when they all act together and try to pull a trick on these two, and then when they get discovered, now that's the funny part.
Yeah. So how many episodes are out so far, actually?
14. So far, oh, wow. Asian fan subs, 14.
Oh, it's been out for a while then. Yeah. I wonder if there's any English ones available.
I don't know. I don't see it anywhere. So
yeah, I haven't heard of it except for a couple of anime websites that have been mentioned that mentioned it once or twice. But I haven't seen anybody following it.
It's just addictive watching Ayako kicking gets all pissed and kicking ass and kicks some ass, and it's just like they'll laugh their asses off and enjoy being the asses kicked.
I have to admit, I never really got sick of seeing Naru punch out Keitaro in.
No, but that's like the one thing, though. That's like one thing. That's always the same pattern. It's always the same guy. You know?
And it started to get somewhat disturbing later on because Keitaro, like, especially when Keitaro starts like groveling and starts behaving essentially like an abused child every time he sees her, and that starts getting a little bit like it starts to cross, I think, a little bit of a line there, where it just starts turning into pure sadism. But.
Nothing. This is funny though, and I like the little girl. The little girl's she worships her older brother, who's like a demon king or something. Not really demon, but he's got superpowers too.
Okay.
And then he and Ayako fought, but I guess she won or something. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't want to say a lot more. Like that would spoil some of the fun of it, but she's funny too. And she's got a couple of funny sidekicks to come along with, and she's a little kid, and those two are like. 30s.
Furries. Yeah.
30s, 20s, something, 30s maybe?
Oh, 20s and 30s. Not furries. You know what I mean by furries, right?
What did you come up with that? No, I
don't know. That's what it sounded like you were saying at first. 30s.
30s.
30s. Enunciate your T's.
Furries. Oh, that's right.
I think one day there will be.
The two youths. What is a youth? Okay, the two.
There's
going to
be a furry anime one day. Because that's the last fetish they haven't covered.
Ew. You only find this in porn.
I know. Like, really, porn among us. Ew. It's horrible, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what I've seen in a nutshell. I mean, it doesn't compare. It's not outstanding. But I love it.
Oh, it's just sounds like Zero No Sky Mice. So you watched all of it?
No, I'm on episode 8. Like, I've been watching Code Geass.
Yeah.
Like, USA. Ha ha ha. No, I don't think so. The main character who takes over, who's trying to take over, is not even... He's not even Japanese.
No, he's not. He's, and he's also not particularly sympathetic. He's pretty... quite amoral, bordering on evil. And, he's actually very similar to the protagonist of Death Note. That's really what it reminded me of.
No, but he doesn't want to see any more Japanese killed, though. He said, in order to have a good country, you need to have all your resources intact, which also means people. So I find that more believable than saying, you know, I just don't want to see all these people get hurt anymore. You know, I just want to save all of them, even though they're not even white. Oh, just kidding. But anyway.
Well, nobody in anime looks Japanese anyway. So it's kind of hard to, like...
Really Harmageddon. Have you ever seen Harmageddon?
No, I haven't.
Everyone in there looks like Asian. Well, not really? Everyone, but Asians look Asian.
The only anime I can think of where all the, like, Asian characters look Asian is Perfect Blue. That was one where they actually tried to draw the faces in a kind of a realistic manner. And everybody had black hair and, you know, that sort of thing. So
I don't know. But Code Geass is done by Clamp, isn't it?
Apparently, they did the character designs. I don't think they did the story. The story is very unclampish, quite frankly.
I hate the design. I'll be perfectly honest with you. These people have extremely long, sticky arms. Yeah, they don't. Long, sticky legs.
I don't think the design style fits the genre, quite frankly.
It's so weird.
It's like shoujo character designs.
I like the way they have like chobits, which they had normal design. And then after that, you you know, they got sticky arms.
Yeah, it's like the... Well, that's kind of the shoujo trope. I mean, I think they changed it in Chobits because Chobits isn't a shoujo manga. It's a shonen or a seinen manga, you know, aimed at young men. And I think it was Clamp trying to experiment or trying to do something different. And I'm not sure, I mean, who did the storyline for Code Geass, but it's definitely not Clamp material.
Code Geass.
See, I have no idea what to call it or how to
pronounce it. Geass. G-ass.
I think that's a name that's really asking for it. I think they'll probably, when they release it in America, they're just going to call it Lelouch the Rebellion, because they're not going to... Just like they got stripped off Laputa in the release of Laputa here. They just call it Castle in the Sky. Because, well, Laputa means something in Spanish. I mean, it means prostitute in Spanish.
Does it?
And here's the thing. It was purely intentional. The name comes from Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels. And in Gulliver's Travels, there is actually a floating castle in the sky called Laputa, where people make, all these scientists make all these useless inventions. It was intentionally called that by Jonathan Swift. And so...
Science whores.
Yeah, basically science whores. And they had useless inventions in which they discovered a way to make basically shit come out of your mouth. Talking out of your ass and other things like things of that nature. See, Jonathan Swift was
one of the scientists was Jim Carrey.
No, I have no chance? The thing is that Swift, if Swift were alive today, he wrote this in the 1700s. If Swift were alive today, I have absolutely every confidence he would be writing South Park episodes. That's exactly the kind of humor that he liked and the kind of satire he did.
South Park movie starring Jim Carrey.
Oh yeah, that too. Though, and he would be the guy doing like all the voices or something like that, and he'd be writing all the jokes. That's exactly the kind of humor Swift deals in.
No, he'll have a live action movie.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, like so we got away from stuff, but that's what's from there. Well, okay, but at that,
Megadairy.
So that's what Megadairy does. It's
all right. I've also been. I just started watching a new show called Nodame Cantabile, which is it's actually apparently the show that's taken the place. It's in the same, I think, the time slot that Honey and Clover went in, which was it's in the Noitama block, which is the block that of anime, late night anime that's aimed more at young women and older viewers. I'm watching it mostly because it's the first anime I know of that deals intelligently with classical music, and they played pieces that I learned how to play at one point. So.
Oh, yes. It's your guilty jerk of pleasure to classic music, classical music.
Hey, it got me to drag my keyboard out and actually start playing again. I think that's actually pretty special. And they actually played, like, the piece that they featured in the first episode was the last classical piece I ever learned how to play, the Sonata Pathétique by Beethoven. And they were actually playing a movement that I learned at one point. I used to play it actually pretty well, but not anymore. When I tried it again, I can't do it anymore. My fingers are so stiff now. It's sad. Wow. But the music is all accurate. The storyline itself is actually pretty ho hum, quite frankly. But ho hum. I'm just watching it for the music. So
it's your guilty pleasure. What the hell?
Yeah, it's not quite so guilty. It's a pleasure that's probably unrelated to the story. It has everything to do with the pleasure of seeing characters play classical music and look like they're having fun doing it. And...
Oh, I guess before we go, like Afro Samurai 2, he still didn't talk.
Really?
He didn't talk.
Here's the thing. I made a mistake on the casting. Much. I made a mistake on the casting information in my little review of Afro Samurai 1. Samuel L. Jackson actually does two voices. He not only does Afro Samurai, he also does that really loudmouth sidekick, which I thought was actually Ron Perlman. It's not. Like the one that sounds like Eddie Murphy. That's Samuel L. Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah, so he actually does talk a lot more than I thought. But he's not talking as Afro Samurai.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. But that's really cool, because he hasn't go with, what the fuck, you just blew, you just killed my bitch.
Beep, gonna... beep, beep, beep. Anyway. Anyway.
Who gives a shit, yeah.
Alright, looks like we're approaching roughly the 50-minute mark or so. So, it looks like we'll go ahead and wrap up this week's episode. And next week, you're going to see some changes. And So stay tuned, keep in touch, write comments, please, and
flames! Flames!
See y'all next week.
Later. Sumemo mi dai